Welcome to the Jay Young Show. On this episode, Jay sits down with Jim Mitchell, head of America's oil analysts at Refinitiv. They do a deep dive on ESG reporting, talk about the pros and cons of carbon capture technology, and the impact of China's oil consumption on global oil prices. Enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Jay Young here. Man, this is going to be a great show today. I'm really pleased to announce that, you know, Mr. Jim Mitchell is going to be here with Refinitiv. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you having you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Look forward to your knowledge. Man, you do this quite a bit. So can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Number one, your background, but also then tell us a little bit about what you're doing now.
So a little bit about my background. I started at Cargill in Minneapolis, actually, as a corn trader, corn wheat trader, and got into the weather derivative industry when that started in 1999. And that's what actually got me into trading gas and power. I traded gas and power against weather. And then while at Shell, a couple of iterations in there. And then while at Shell, Shell moved me over to be a gas trader. And I did that for a few years, traded Shell's equity gas and a whole bunch of pipes and storage and everything that Shell had at the time. And then moved over to the oil side, as at the time, there were still some utilities buying fuel oil for generation. Oil people in general don't know how to talk to utilities. They talk a completely different language. They needed somebody to talk utility and oil, and that's what I did, and that's what got me started. And from there, I started trading and was pretty good at it, probably a little smarter. I thought I was a little smarter than I actually was. Went to a hedge fund, had a great year. The hedge fund ran into some financial issues, which limited my trading and kind of burned me out. So I moved to the service side of the industry, and I've been at Refinitiv now. It was Thomson Reuters for 7 years. And what I do now is I run a group of analysts that we cover everything from crude to products, shipping, pipeline, refineries, all that kind of stuff. We put all of our data information, prices, analysis on a platform called Icon. And we are one of the bigger players, and especially on the physical side of the market.
Okay, good, good. So you're not only, are you doing any natural gas, or is this LNG market, or is this oil, or?
We do as a company. They have focused me on oil and products. So that's pretty much what I do now.
Yeah, okay. Oil and products does not mean natural gas or LNG.
No. So I have traded that in the past, but I'm far from an expert at it now. I've been out of the oil side for a while, probably 10 years, or I'm sorry, out of the natural gas side for about 10 years.
Because I'm just wondering why we're producing natural gas over here at $2 and China's buying it for 15, Japan's at 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're just not selling it today. I know that you buy low, sell high. There's a big, what do you call it? That in between that you can make a $10 or $15.
That arbitrage. Yeah. But the cost to liquefy natural gas is coming down, but a liquefaction plant will cost somewhere around $10 billion. And they run into issues. There's a really big one down in Freeport, a little bit south, southwest of me, that runs into, it feels like perpetual problems. But then there's a lot of need for LNG.
Yeah. Oh man, if you can buy for two and sell for 15, I know that I don't. Not that I'm a math whiz. I'm not a math whiz, but man, I know that's a profit.
Got a lot
even
of
if it costs $2-3. Yeah, I mean, I know Freeport's getting ready to open back up. Yep. I believe I heard something about it yesterday at the Doug conference in Shreveport, and I was talking about the same thing because man, it's just it's amazing. But let's talk about oil. That's your space and your alley and where you go. And let's just talk about oil for a second because where do you think demand's going in the next 3 to 5 years? Let's say where do you think demand's going?
I think it grinds higher. I think as, you know, looking at the rest of 2023, you know, some of the big topics coming through the rest of this year, China is opening, but China's been pretty clear that they're going to manage their opening, right? They are looking for 5.1% growth in 2023 and 5.5% growth in 2024. The reality is it's probably going to be closer to 7. That difference being about 600,000 barrels a day between that 5-ish and that 7-ish area. So it's a chunky number.
It is.
There's some other aspects, right? The French strikes, the potential strikes in the North Sea, the relationship between China, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, of all things. There's a whole bunch of macro stuff, and I haven't even talked about banks and a possible recession, and what's this bill in California, SBX 1-2, which is a cap on refinery margins for gasoline only, which, okay, that seems a little crazy. And then, all of the wind and solar, the renewable challenges that are happening. And then, of course, those three giant bills from, one from 2021, the bilateral infrastructure, but then the Inflation Reduction Act, and to a lesser extent, the Science and Chips Act, which funds more of technology and research than the IRA does, which funds more assets and activity. But so there's some huge macro things hitting the oil market right now, and will for certainly the balance of this year.
I'm sorry, Jim, but you got to remember they're selling more Teslas in California these days than they ever. They sold 1.2 million last year, and they're expecting to sell 1.8 million. So there's all these electric cars that are coming out, and you're saying demand's going to continue to increase?
I am. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. I am. So I think it's beyond the EVs, right? So the debate, and I do this a bunch. I'm on calls. I was on one a couple of weeks ago that talked about EVs, and so battery electric against hybrid. Now remember, China's path has always been hybrid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means generally a smaller battery, relatively efficient internal combustion engine that is designed to drive an electric drive, right? It's not designed to drive a powertrain. Battery electric are different, right? So the battery electric are selling way lower than the hybrids, even in the U.S. As this phenomena expands, this electric vehicle phenomena, and I do believe it will expand. When you look at the numbers, the hybrids, whether it's a gas hybrid or a plug-in hybrid, and it's the gas hybrids that are expanding faster than either the plug-in or the battery electric. So will it have will it dent the gas demand? Yeah, sure. We're seeing that, no doubt. But what I've seen is that efficiency in internal combustion engines has a much bigger impact on gasoline demand than electric will probably for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah. No, I can see that too. I agree with you. The big thing is our population growth and a lot more products that are using oil. So it's not just automobiles that are using oil, right?
That's right.
And there are more products that are made out of oil than just gasoline.
There are. And one of the big things, so shale brought back a lot of the petchem industry back to the U.S. from other places, predominantly Japan. And a lot of that had to do with cheap ethane and cheap methane, natural gas, right? Saudi Arabia Basic Industry is building this huge plant down around Corpus Christi. And when you build a plant like that, it's more than just that plant. There's probably 15 or 20 supporting plants around it to feed that particular plant. And then you get auto manufacturing because they're producing a lot of auto parts. Now you get a lot of auto part manufacturing in addition to that. So it's definitely a multiplier.
Right, right. That's true. I mean, you use for asphalt or plastics or almost everything in the air right now is made out of some form of oil. Very, very important product. For everything. So it obviously is made for the tires that are on Teslas and a lot of other products that are made. But anyway, so that's good. I mean, because people are like, well, Jay, are you going to get out of the business 5 years, 10 years? Is this a generational type business where you can literally take you use this for time and time again or for 2-3 generations? Yeah, we're going to be using oil for a long, long period of time. I mean, there's only so much oil in the world reserve-wise, and I believe that that's a different topic, but there's only so much oil in the world, but there's also a huge, I mean, I think global demand this year is going to be up, you know, 2-3%. So
yeah, agreed.
You're seeing oil demand around the world continuing to go up, and a lot of these countries that are coming out and using more, you know, going from, you know, bicycle to moped to motorcycles to cars, and that's still in some countries a factor.
Yeah, it's a
big
factor.
About what they're going to do.
So, Jay, just to give you some perspective, I did some research about a year ago. I do a podcast called The Rundown Tank, and I estimated that the global reserves are somewhere around 6 trillion barrels. 6 trillion. And granted, wow, that's oil shale, and that's going to be some really expensive oil to produce, but 6 trillion barrels. We use a little over 100 million a day right now. So in my lifetime, we're not running out of oil.
Right.
We may transition away from oil, but we're not running out of oil. And even in my kids' lifetime, we're not running out of oil.
There's a big chance on that reserves. I don't know if that's proven reserves or that's original.
That's everything. Yeah. Because like, to give you an example, there's a fairly large reservoir underneath Montreal, Canada. They will never drill that, ever. The Quebecers, I think they call themselves, they've been very clear. They'll never drill it. There's also a huge reservoir in between Cuba and Florida, right? Will they drill that? Probably not. I mean, it's right in a shipping lane.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff that I considered when I looked at that number.
I know there's a lot of wells, too. When you drill a well, they say there's, you know, 500 million barrels of oil or 500 whatever. There's only so much oil that's recoverable.
That's right, man. Yeah.
You know, and then there's some people that go back in and refrack, and then there's, because, you know, in a section. So, I don't think we're going to run out of oil, but I do think it's going to be a lot more expensive and to drill and complete and to recover some oil that's in these different types of projects. And to do that, it costs money. And the only way that you're going to be able to do it is when prices are higher. You know, they say that what's the biggest solution for high prices? You know, high prices, right?
Yeah.
And what's the biggest solution for low prices? Low prices.
Low prices, you know, that's right.
So when they're low, when they're low, people start drilling like mad, and all of a sudden makes your supply worth more than demand, and all of a sudden your prices, you know, fluctuate.
Yeah. The interesting part about that is on the top side, that has changed. With the current administration, when you put artificial constraints on an industry, all of a sudden now the capacity to drill when prices gets high gets constrained. And that's what we're seeing now. That's what we saw a couple of years ago. And then I think we're going to see that going forward. And unfortunately for your business, or maybe fortunately, because you have assets already producing, it's going to keep prices high. You know, do we see $40 in oil?
Yeah.
No, I don't think we see that anytime soon.
I agree. I know that we're not drilling. I know rig count's down, and rig count's down, which means that we're not drilling as many wells as we were before the pandemic. 25-30% they're down. But the big reason, I know, Jim, that you're watching this, is the reason why are they down? And the reason why they're down is because, like you said, I mean, there's not... people aren't coming back. There's public companies out there that have, you know, these green people on their boards that, green, literally green, you know, but these people that are saying, we don't want to drill for oil and gas. We don't like it. We want to go clean, as they drive their truck to the whatever, but they're on the boards. And so they're saying to the boards, we want you to buy back shares or dividends, give us dividends or pay down your debt instead of drill, baby, drill.
Mm-hmm.
The governments, I mean, there's not only federal government, but there's also state governments or city governments. And like in Boulder County, Colorado, I mean, there's oil there, but you're never going to drill it there. Kind of like your Quebec state a minute ago. We're having trouble in Colorado, and not trouble, but you can do it, but it just takes time, which is not in your best interest. I can get a drilling permit in Texas this week if I wanted to drill. In Colorado, Wyoming, it takes 3 months, you know, 6 months.
Yeah.
A lot different. So, therefore, it's just a big deal. But also, too, capital. I mean, Mm-hmm. We're talking about private equity money. We're talking about banks. We're talking about a lot of different people that are just literally, you know, out of the business. You know, they said, hey, during the pandemic, we got stung with negative oil prices. We're out. We're not coming back into this industry anytime soon. So they're out, and which means that you're not drilling as much, obviously, which keeps your supply off or down, which means you're gonna keep a good bottom, if you will, which I think is, you know, $60 a barrel, $65 a barrel. We just saw that.
Now we're up to
70s, and I believe it's going to go higher as we go into the summertime. Let me ask you about this. We don't have a tremendous amount of time. I've got my red shirt on. I normally wear a suit and tie. I'm a suit and tie guy, but hey, we're going to the Ranger game. Ranger opening day is today, so
I know
it's
that.
It's a big day in baseball. Opening day is, as I know, a lot of people will be turning on their TVs for the opening day. But let me ask you this: what about your idea with strategic reserves? I know that Biden took out half of our strategic reserves, or a couple of hundred million barrels, before the elections in November. What are your thoughts about him coming back in and buying that and replenishing that?
Yeah. So Jay, let me first say, my son's a college baseball player up in the Dallas area. So I'm obviously a big fan. Maybe the Astros and not the Rangers, but because I think we have a better pitching staff, but whatever. to the SBR. There was a bit of an unwritten rule prior to this administration that you don't use this for economic purposes. And for the most part, it wasn't. The president has, since 1975, has always had the ability to draw from the SBR. There is some criteria that he has to meet. They're relatively simple. What it basically comes down to is his opinion. And what happened in this particular year is his opinion was he wanted to withdraw a lot of oil, and he did. We're down to an area. So starting in April, so in a couple of days, the last of the 180 million from last year has already been sold, and it'll start to come onto the market. So it's April through June. It's 26 million barrels, so 285,000 a day. It doesn't have to be ratable. So, you know, 26 million divided by 91 days. But it is coming out. It has been sold. Coming in the fourth quarter, there should be about 25 million coming back in exchanges from prior to this 180 million from last year. So should be net. The president has one more card to play, and that's 88 million barrels that were expected to come out in 27, 28, 29, and 30. For your listeners, where the 180 million came from were a bunch of other congressionally mandated releases in other bills that the Biden administration pushed forward into 2022. And that's how he was able to do that. He has one more, and it's a pretty good chunk. It's 88 million barrels. That will get us down, once we get through that will get us down to the congressionally mandated limit, 254.2 million barrels in the SPR. If the president or any future presidents want to withdraw more than that, they have to get Congress to lower the minimum in the SPR, which is not going to happen. Now, Secretary Jennifer Granholm, the Department of Energy, mentioned in a House in Washington, in a House, not debate, speech, that she didn't think that the president wanted to buy any more back this year, 2023, which caused a little uproar. Last week in Puerto Rico, she said that they will buy if the price is right, which, okay, it's pretty clear that this is now a swing barrel kind of arrangement as opposed to an emergency, which it was originally designed for. And okay, that's okay, but it's kind of opening a Pandora's box, because where that may work for this administration and that side of the political aisle, there will be a time when it's going to work for the other side of the political aisle.
Well, okay, that's good. Well, I mean, I know that Trump says that he was, you know, he was buying that oil at $20-$30 a barrel and filled it to the brim, and Biden, you know, took it out for the only reason he took it out was for the elections. I mean, it's for prices to go down so people would go by the pump, I guess, on the way to the voting booth and pay less and go, oh, hey, Democrats that made these prices go lower cost me less money. They're, you know, anyway, it's so far from, anyway, I think technology, I want to ask you a technology question. I know that the strategic reserves is a huge political battle. I know there's a lot of people on the Democrat, you know, Democrat or Republican side that it'll give you their opinions about that. But let's talk a little bit about technology, because you did mention, you know, there's a lot of oil in the world and it's going to last for a long time. But the carbon capture technology, I know that's, people want to hear about, you know, some ESG and about carbon capture technology. I'm really not 100% up on that. So can you just tell me and the listeners here, you know, how do you see this technology affecting, you know, the oil and gas industry in the coming years?
Yeah, great question. So two big points there. One, starting with ESG. ESG is a reporting function, right? It doesn't necessarily take carbon out of the air. It's a reporting function for public companies mostly in what they are doing in environmental, social, and governance. Obviously, the E part of that is by far the biggest piece, the environmental side. So when we look at the technology that helps pull some of the CO2 is particularly what they're looking for out of the air. That technology is advancing and has advanced a great deal. Carbon capture is always going to be expensive. It takes power to run the fans. And I don't know if the listeners have seen what these units look like. There's about 16, 20, something like that, big industrial fans, probably a 4-foot diameter kind of fan. And they'll stack them up two levels and, you know, 4 or 5 wide. And it literally just sucks the air right out of the air. Goes through and it pulls the carbon right out of the air, which is fantastic. But it's coming out of the air at 15 or 20 feet off the ground, which, okay, it'd be a lot better if it was pulling it out of the air at 5 or 10,000 feet off the ground, but, you know, that's not possible. Once you get beyond that then, and this is where this industry is, when I say this industry, I mean the carbon capture industry, is going to run into issues in that permitting. They have to permit these carbon pipes the same way you have to permit an oil pipeline. And these things operate, these carbon pipelines operate at really high pressure, and it's literally liquefied CO2 flowing through these pipelines, so really high pressure. And then it'll go to some sequestration point where they can inject it back. And, you know, people like UJ probably inject CO2 into the side of your wells. I know when I was at Shell, they did that. It's a great spot to sequester CO2. Does all of it stay down there? No. Does a lot of it? Yeah. So there's opportunities in this carbon capture. The technology is going crazy. The Inflation Reduction Act is put a huge amount of money into the development of this. And the Science and Chips Act is funding some of the research to do this as well. So a completely separate act. And the Science and Chips Act, which was really designed for bringing microchip manufacturing back to the U.S., has a big component, somewhere $25.9 billion, a big chunk going to the EIA and another chunk to universities. To fund research to do exactly what we're talking about.
I mean, that is kind of, that gets deep. That gets really deep. Well, let me ask you this, because I know that we were talking about this the other day, and somebody said, well, Jay, so, because I said something about on the radio, I said, well, you know, what we're doing right now is, I mean, you know, China's opening up and a lot of different things, the economy. I said, but we've had the bank. You can see how sensitive the price of oil is. I mean, even if you have something like any type of disruption, like the bank failures or inflation, man, you can see prices go up and down really, really fast. But let me ask you this, because this is more of a, I mean, I can see bank failures or inflation hitting home here in the United States, but, you know, there's been a lot of people say, hey, man, prices are getting ready to go up. And the reason why prices are going to go up in the United States is because China's using 16 million barrels of oil, and they're going to increase that. I mean, I'm like, somebody was like, what does China's 16 million barrels have to do with me going to the gas pump and paying 20, 30 cents more? What? How does that affect, or how does, like, the world, how does China affect me going to the gas pump, which I need to go immediately right after this before I go to the Ranger?
Yeah, the price is probably going up the next couple of days. But so China has the second biggest refinery complex in the world behind the U.S. From our perspective, and we deal with, we have a data supplier that we deal very closely with who their job is, they're on the phone constantly. They got 600 people around the world, and they're on the phone constantly on what the refining industry is doing. And they're doing it by units, right? So they're talking about crude units and cat crackers and all this refining stuff. They don't see China increasing their, refinery base substantially in the next year or so, in the next couple of years. So, and they have a lot. So China's had a lot for quite a while. They keep increasing, right? A few years ago, they were just at 13 million barrels a day. And now you mentioned they're up around 16. I think there might be a little bit less than that, but it's still a lot. So when China buys oil, it's a little bit different from the U.S. because China only produces about 5 million barrels a day. And they're consuming 16 million barrels a day, which means there's 11 million barrels a day that they're buying from other places, right? They are big buyers and have been for a while. So when prices get low and China fills their version of the SPR, we see, and in part of our package, we can see ships on the map. So I can see oil tankers sitting outside Dalian, which is in the northern part of China, and there may be 20 of them sitting there. 20 VLCCs at 2 million barrels a ship. So they have a really, really good system to do that. And they're very efficient at it. And they're very good at it, like we are in the U.S.
Right. Let's finish up with that statement about how much oil. So you mean that China's making 5 million, they're using 15, 16 million barrels. Yep. That's an arbitrage, obviously. The United States is in about the same, not the same situation, because we do produce 13 and we're using 2021.
Yeah.
But we need oil from other countries. And there's other countries out there like Iran, Iraq, and Russia that are producing more. I mean, I think I mentioned in my newsletter last week that Russia is producing like 11 million barrels a day. They're using 4. So they have 7 million barrels a day that they have at their discretion to sell. That's a lot of money. 7 million barrels a day?
It's a little bit under that. So in November, for those of us that remember what the price did the end of the year, Russia increased their production by 1.4 million barrels a day in through December. And that got them to around 10.5. And now they're having some production issues. So now I think they're down probably a little bit over 9 million barrels a day. The refineries are coming off a little bit in response to that. Some of that also has to do with the fact that they have to maintain their refineries just like we do in the U.S. You can't run these things full blast forever. They need to be maintained, especially when you're operating at high heat and high pressure. And China is doing the same at the moment. So we look at balance. Right. So coming into March, I thought the U.S. was somewhere around, or the U.S., the world was somewhere around 400,000 barrels a day long, right? Which is not that much, considering we view that number as like 102 million, and where some other analysts will say about 100 million. There's some model issues there, not that important, but it's still a big number, right? With Russia coming back 500,000. And, you know, they said they're cutting back. The reality is they're having operational issues, so they didn't really have a choice if they're cutting back or not. So that was 500. You take that. So now we're 100 short. You throw in now the 285 a day from the U.S., from the SPR, and now we're 180-ish to 200 barrels, 200,000 long. That's really not that much. That's essentially flat, which is why I believe OPEC hasn't changed their production cuts. They have another meeting here, the OPEC Plus meeting coming up April 3rd. And I don't expect that they're going to do anything with their production. I think they're going to let it roll for another 6 months at least, because I believe they're viewing the same thing that I am, that we're relatively flat production.
And they, I know they look at this, and did you say there were 600 people in China trying to look for oil?
Oh, no. No, our supplier that looks at refining around the world, it's the company's name is IIR, Industrial Information Resources. They're in Sugar Land here, southwest of Houston. They have 600 people around the world that literally they're from a trader's perspective, we call them phone bangers. They're on the phone constantly. I see phone two hands, and they're calling engineers all around the world to figure out. So I heard your cat cracker is down. Well, that's interesting. So is your crude unit still up? And those are the conversations they have, and they do it nonstop. It's phenomenal information.
Wow. Yeah, I mentioned to you before the show that I read a book called Rigged, R-I-G-G-E-D. It's about the monstrosity of the oil business and how. Man. But I mean, imagine if Iran, Iraq, or somebody has 3-4 million barrels a day. Just imagine if you have an extra 3-4 million a day, times $100 a barrel, times $80 a barrel, times 30 days in a month. No wonder there's all these Russian, what do you call them, oligarchs or whatever.
Yeah.
And all these huge ships and everything that, man, that's just so much money. And
money's immense.
With the traders making sure that they have oil in each place. I mean, there is so much that goes into the markets when you're talking about filling up your tank. I mean, I know everybody just has the convenience of going to your gas station and putting in and that's it. But man, there's so much in the back, you know, on the behind the curtain, I guess, if you will, to make sure that there is oil and there is gasoline that gets there so you can drive and be very comfortable. So it's a deal. Hey, yeah. I'll tell you what, I got to go. I know we're, Jim, close out with how people, with your closing thoughts, number one, you have as much time as you want. Your closing thoughts about what you'd like our listeners to hear, number one. But number two, how can we keep up with you and how can we help you and how can the listeners here, how can they benefit you?
Yeah. So from a closing thought perspective, there's a lot of big macro events hitting the oil space now. And to be honest, there always has been. It's a big, big money, big market. A lot of big players outside the U.S., they're all governmental. The U.S. is one of the very few places in the world where it's people like Jay producing oil. In Saudi Arabia, Saudi Aramco is owned by one person, a little bit more now that they have a small public offering, but it's essentially the king, right? One owner. So with that said, it is a very large market. It employs a lot of people worldwide, you know, engineers and planners and roughnecks and gas station owners and people extruding plastics and building, assembling cars with the pieces that are built from this. Golf balls are almost exclusively a petroleum product. It's an immense, immense market. It's not going away anytime soon, in spite of some headlines you may see. It's not. It can't. There is no replacement for oil right now. There may be for pieces of it, but for the whole thing, it's not going away. Certainly in my lifetime. So with that said, where you can find my commentary, the easiest place to find it, if you are not an Icon, which is our product for Refinitiv, if you're not an Icon customer, the best place to find it is on my LinkedIn. Jim Mitchell, you'll see me post stuff at least once a week. I try to educate and amuse, so It's not just dry engineering stuff or something like that. I do a podcast called The Rundown Tank, which with my partner Corey Stewart. We try to have a little bit of fun with that. We also spend a lot of time researching. So it is about numbers. It is about research. We try to make it educational and amusing.
That's great, Jim. And I really do appreciate you having me on the show, because I do know there's a lot of people that hear about oil and gas prices and wonder, you know, why are they going up? Why are they going down? And there's just so much more into it. And there's so much there that it's amazing. So your thoughts for the price of oil by the end of this year, can you give me some type of a number?
So my impression, I've heard, and I'm certainly in contact with some of the big banks that think it may be going a little bit higher than I do. I think we grind a little bit higher. I think somewhere between probably 70 and 90 most of the time through. And I know that's a $20 range, but I think we're going to chop around in there. There's big macro things that could make it go a lot higher. There's some macro things that could keep it in between the 65 to 75 level. It's hard to say which one wins out. There's just a lot of stuff going on.
That's a good window. I mean, I like the 65, 75, 80. I mean, that we want to make sure those numbers, we don't need for those numbers to be 180, because then everybody will be in the oil business, and then it'll be ridiculous to be able to drill wells. You know, the invoices and payables would go, really high. So we want to buy low, sell high. So we're getting in here right now and getting some rig prices and for longer term.
So good to hear it.
Good. Well, hey Jim, thank you so much for the. We'll be rooting for your Astros, kinda. I know they're in our. But yeah. Hey, Nolan Ryan's a good friend of mine, and I was partners with him on the with the Texas Rangers. I was a owner along with Nolan. We'll see Nolan today at the ballpark. He's here. He's in Arlington.
Okay.
He's out there, and for some reason,
his son Reed, I'm sure, is in Houston.
Yeah. Well, Reed had the opening of a bank last night, and Reed said to me that he may or may not be here in because he was going to be in my suite. So I don't know if he's going to be here or not, but I don't know where he's going to be. But he had an opening of a bank last night, and he was anyway. But Nolan, Ruth, and Reed are good friends and partners. But anyway,
that's awesome.
Hey, we hope the best. We like the Astros, but you guys have lost some players, and we've gained some players this year. So
yeah,
hopefully the Rangers will go back and I got my rings. I'll show you my ring. Hold on.
I got to admit that I will be watching DeGrom pitch for you guys in a few hours here.
Yeah. So here's a picture of the rings that we got this is the American League Championship Series. I got to go home and get my ring before I go to the opening day, but I tell you what, it's a great time. The people that I met through the ownership was also fascinating. We could do a whole show on the Ray Davis, the Bob Simpson, the Ken Hurst, the Billy Quinns, the Toby Dardens, the Dave Woods.
I would love to be a part of that.
Oh my God. It was so much fun. And especially going to the World Series twice.
Yeah.
It wasn't not winning, but it was fun going. And we had an incredible time 10 years ago. And
it's tough enough to get there to actually win. Man.
Absolutely. And you guys did it. You guys did it a couple of times here lately.
We did. I think a lot of that had to do with pitching.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We had, 100%.
We had a big stud and then a bunch of young guys.
Yeah, but it was also Mattress Mac. I mean, you couldn't have done it without
him. He is a phenomenal person.
He is. I've never met him, but I know that Reed delivered the ring, the first ring, over to him, and there was a great podcast, and of course, Reed's on my podcast as well.
Oh, that's great.
But I know that I didn't have Mattress Mac on. Maybe that's who I should have had on.
There
that
you go. You should ask
incredibly
him.
Incredibly entertaining. You know, so he's getting his ring today from...
Have you seen the picture of him picking up his winnings in Vegas? He literally had a wheelbarrow full of money and put it on a plane.
Man, that's awesome. He is unbelievable. And just cares a lot about the people of Houston and all that. So
He very much does.
He's incredible.
And so does his family.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, anyway, I know, Jim, we could talk about this forever. Thank you so much. I appreciate having you on, and let's be sure and stay in touch.
Yep, I appreciate it, Jay. Thanks.